Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Michael Stewart. What's up, Doc?
Not much. I'm just over here chewing on a carrot. Yeah, actually, you'd be the one chewing on a carrot. Anyway,
what's up, Doc?
I haven't watched cartoons in a long time. I'm doing well. Nice little Tuesday. I had a patient with a retinal detachment today. I had to send for immediate surgery. It was a good time. He was sent to my schedule from a different office, and I was thinking to myself, oh, come on, just see him yourself. And it ended up he had a true emergency, so I'm glad that he got in with somebody, even if it meant more work for me. Anyway, doing well. Looking forward to talking some football now that the eyes are repaired. No mock draft this week. Unfortunately, I love mock drafting, but we're ready to dive back into divisional breakdowns. So looking forward to that, James. I want to know how you are doing first, though.
Oh, I'm doing just dandy. I didn't really have anything interesting to say. I expected to look over my shoulder and see what the puppy Indy is doing, and he's not in the room anymore, so I assume he's eating the couch. But I'm doing good, ready to talk some fantasy football. We're at the point in the summer where we are very thick into mock drafting, and you're starting to experiment with seeing which strategies work for you, how you get the best team composition, and it's at the point where you're starting to feel good about things. And then I know August is going to hit. We're going to get to the end of the month, and everybody's drafts are going to start, and ADPs are going to go very different from how you expect them. So I'm just like trying to stay grounded in not getting too locked into the things I'm seeing. Are you experiencing something similar, or how are you experiencing your mock drafting phenomenon right now, Stu?
Well, actually, now that you mentioned some rising and falling in ADP, you're starting to feel it a touch more, even when you're mocking just against the regular ECR. Mostly in part to some of the news that we need to talk about today, James. So there's some interesting stuff. There's some, you know, sad and unfortunate stuff. But we're also in the time of the off season that guys kind of get themselves into trouble. They get a little stir crazy. They don't have, you know, 56 other men to go bash their heads into. So they start hitting women. Quinshon Judkins hitting women.
Yeah, we are a firmly anti-hitting women podcast. I feel like this shouldn't be a hard thing to do, to not abuse women. I don't know. But Quinshon Judkins, if you have not heard the news, had a domestic battery event on July 7th. He has been in jail and let out on bond. Not sure what's going to happen with that. We've seen this sort of thing end guy's career. We've seen this sort of thing not matter at all to guy's career. Mm-hmm. So there's really not a lot we can say about it right now. I mean, it's going to affect his... I mean, it feels kind of dumb. We're talking about an actual domestic battery case, and we're going to talk about how it affects him for fantasy football. It feels weird, but...
Mm-hmm. It's a little too fresh to say anything too definitive right now. I mean, things still have to shake out in his, like, criminal or civil proceedings or what have you, whatever he has to deal with as a result of his actions. But it's definitely going to tank his ADP here in the short term. We're going to have to see if, as more news comes out, where it ultimately ends up. But you do have to start to consider the other guys. If Judkins is suspended or misses time, I think the baseline is something like 6 games, which is kind of killer for a rookie running back. Like, you already needed some time to build trust from the rest of your team, and now you're going to miss 6 games and then try to build a rapport with everyone on the field. That doesn't feel great. He basically becomes undraftable to me, but now we got to start paying attention to the guys behind him. I mean, we got Jerome Ford, who they barely brought back. They made him take a pay cut to stay with the Browns. He is serviceable as an RB3 option, maybe. Maybe even worse, since it's the Browns and they're going to be pretty bad. There's also, I think he was fifth rounder, Samson, in mm-hmm. this year's draft, so he might be thrust into a little bit of a role with the Browns as well. So
We'll keep an eye on that situation and see how high those two guys rise and what, if any, suspension comes for Judkins. I would assume there's gonna be a suspension, but we just gotta kind of wait and see. But we got a good show planned for you all today. NFC North Part 1. We are taking the top half of the division, that being the Detroit Lions and the Minnesota Vikings. The NFC North last year was the division of death. A lot of fun football being played. There was a point in the season where everybody in that division was like 4-1 or better, and then like the Bears.
I was going to say, what happened to the Bears?
Yeah, what happened to the Bears? The Bears are the Bears. But we're not talking about the Bears today. We're talking about the other one. So let's start with Detroit. And I think I want to start with what I think is one of the most interesting running back rooms in the NFL. And let's talk about Jahmyr Gibbs. For PPR, I'm seeing expert consensus ranking all the way up to RB2. He's a guy who I think has kind of had his ADP jump recently. I don't know how people have him above Bijan, with him splitting a backfield with David Montgomery. Yes, Dan Campbell has those boys rolling. But also, you just lost your offensive coordinator to the Bears. I believe they lost their defensive coordinator, too. So what is that offense going to look like? Was it more Dan Campbell? Was it not? I don't know. I don't really see why Jahmyr Gibbs would be rising right now. That doesn't mean I don't think he's a first-round running back. I think talent-wise, yes, he is. But there's also David Montgomery there. David Montgomery, currently sitting in PPR, RB21. So sitting as a mid-to-low-end RB2. Also, his skill set and his production he had last year, definitely worthy of that RB2 ranking. He did have injuries at the end of the year last year that hampered him from doing something even better, but both of those running backs were high-tier backs for fantasy football. So, Stu, what's your take on these guys, and what would you do with them?
Yeah, it's absolutely super interesting to talk about. They were both really, really incredible for what they were supposed to be in fantasy last year. David Montgomery ended up with a bunch of touchdowns, even missing the last three games or so. He had 12 touchdowns on only 185 attempts. So Gibbs actually out-attempted him 250 to 185. So Gibbs is going to get, you know, the 70%, the 60% of the work. And I don't expect that number to fall. Perhaps that's why people are rising Gibbs just a little bit. He's only 23, and he's already showing out in the NFL for the last year, or year or two, if you count rookie season, which was a little more pedestrian as compared to last year. So really, really excited about Jahmyr Gibbs. I'd be very, very happy, and I expect to see him on a couple of my teams this coming season. I have the standard ADP as of right now. He's going as overall 4, not just running back 4. He's going overall 4, only behind Jamar, Bijan, Saquon in that list right there. I'm totally fine with him rising a little bit. It's super exciting to see young guys like Bijan and Jahmyr really break out and come into their own, see exactly what level of production they can achieve in the National Football League. I'd probably keep him right where he is. I wouldn't go much higher than that. I'd probably still take Saquon, and I'd probably still take Bijan over Gibbs. And you're right. It's because David Montgomery is there. The other two guys don't have a timeshare. David Montgomery, only getting older, ? Missed some time with injury. Mm-hmm. Not going to be the primary guy. Not someone I'm going to be thrilled with to be my RB2 starting on a week-to-week basis, unless Gibbs goes down. If Gibbs goes down, David Montgomery is going to be top 12, at the very least top 15 every single week, so you can set and forget that. You know, just take one of those guys. They're going to be more than serviceable, better than serviceable. And then if the other one goes down, ooh, lights out. You've got it made in the shade. Don't draft both of them. I don't know why I added that at the end. You really should know not to draft both of them, but there you go. Yeah. Super fun to watch.
Yeah. You can stack guys, but you probably shouldn't stack these guys like this. Like, this is not a handcuff thing. You'll hear guys tell you to, if you draft a workhorse, grab their handcuff. This is not a handcuff. Yes, Jahmyr Gibbs is going to put up numbers like a workhorse, but it's like they were last year, Thunder, Lightning, Sonic, and Knuckles. It's that sort of situation. But, Stu, I was thinking about this earlier today. Last year, we saw kind of a running back boom. And I was trying to think about why that might be. As I've thought about it previously, I've thought, well, maybe it's just a schematic trend in the NFL, everybody moving towards a certain kind of offense because of how certain coaching trees are dispersing through the NFL. But then I thought there weren't that many running back injuries last year. Christian McCaffrey's was an extremely high-profile one, but there weren't that many big ones. So, Stu, as a doctor, I guess as a doctor, from your medical expertise, do you think there's going to be a rebound in big injuries this year?
Oh, come on. There's no pattern for injuries. This is a tough sport. Like, there's no projection for injuries. You just have to take it as it comes. There's truly no safe options when you have players that play this game. I mean, maybe we're looking back with a little bit of nostalgia on last year. I'm sure there were plenty of running back injuries, but no, there's no extrapolation. There's no projection. There's no pattern. There's no rebound for injuries. You know, people are going to go on message boards after week three and say, this is the worst year for injuries I've ever seen, and I'm 85. Anyway.
And they'll blame turf.
Yes, they'll blame turf. I mean, it could very well be that, you know, the workhorse running back is going the way of the dodo, that we're distributing the risk of injury and the workload across two, maybe even in some godforsaken backfields, three men. Could be something like that, but no. And I'm an eye doctor, James. I'm not an orthopedic surgeon or anything like that.
More qualified to talk about Najee Harris than anything.
I haven't seen his chart.
Okay, let's go ahead and get to wide receivers, because the Sun God is definitely somebody who you need to have your eyes on, as well as Jameson Williams, also out in the pattern there. Amon-Ra St. Brown, the Sun God, currently looking at in PPR wide receiver 6. Stu, where's he at in standard?
Amon-Ra is down at overall 8. That's wide receiver 4.
Okay. So, I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I recall as a highly sought-after wide receiver last year, he didn't really hit the numbers that a lot of people were expecting him to. Expecting him to be up there with like Jamar, Justin Jefferson, and CeeDee. He did rebound in the back half of the season, but he wasn't as consistent as people expected him to do. This paired with the, as we said before, this running back boom. We saw this with a lot of wide receivers last year. So, him going as wide receiver 6, being probably a first rounder. Stu, if you come to the Sun God, you got the 1-2 flip. How are you viewing that situation? Is he someone you would be targeting? Would you try to look at other guys who are around that spot? How are you looking at that?
I wouldn't be looking anywhere else. If he fell all the way down there, like, I expect him to go, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th overall, maybe. If he made it all the way to the turn, I'd be thanking my lucky stars. I don't know if you were just down on him last year, but he ended up wide receiver 3 between Justin Jefferson and Brian Thomas Jr. And that's perfectly fine. I'm happy with that. in my first round draft pick. I think Sun God is an elite tier wide receiver. He's not Chase and he's not Jefferson, but he's not far behind them. I'd be completely happy building my team around Sun God, Amon-Ra St. Brown. He plays for an excellent offense. Jared Goff is still serviceable enough to support multiple targets, even though I am, as we start to talk about other wide receivers, going to talk about how many mouths are in the Detroit offense overall. So, Sun God, I have no problems with. It's the next guy, James, unless you have anything about Amon-Ra left to say. It's the next guy I'm not quite so high on.
So, we should jump into Jameson Williams. I got a lot of thoughts, but I don't want this to be another hour-long episode, so let's talk about Jameson Williams, currently in PPR, the wide receiver 31. We've seen him a lot almost exclusively as a big downfield threat. He's a big chunk guy. You'll just see Jared Goff throw it up at random points during the game, and Jameson Williams will be 50, 60 yards downfield, where he either gets to a ball and scores big or doesn't. Now, with that, Stu, you said that you weren't super thrilled about Jameson Williams. Counterpoint here. He's going in the wide receiver 30s. I'm looking at him. I've seen him anywhere between like the 5th and the 7th round. Do you want a guy who has big upside potential, big playability? Obviously, he's probably not going to be a consistent look for you every week, but in your flex, is there something you might like about having a guy who is, you know, not a big floor, but a very high ceiling?
Right. There is attractiveness to his player profile. Taking him that late in drafts is totally fine, but I would rather hang my hat on somebody who may not be good right away, but is going to get better over the season goes on. Like someone like Tet McMillan, is going right around the same time. I would rather take him or George Pickens. I'd rather take George Pickens than Jameson Williams, because you're never going to know when Jameson Williams is going to win you a week, and you never know if he's going to lose you your week. He doesn't get enough of the target share to be consistent. He's going to do nothing for three quarters and then all of a sudden catch a 70-yard touchdown, and you're going to say, oh, this is fantastic. I love this guy. He's wide receiver 19 in half-point PPR. That's amazing. Getting him in the 5th or 7th round is a steal. But there's so much variance in that, and I don't expect there to be any level of consistency in his game. I mean, we've got Amon-Ra there. We've got Sam Laporta is still there. Jahmyr Gibbs catches the ball out of the backfield. So those are three other legitimate targets competing with Jameson Williams. David Montgomery is going to get looks on offense. And who is Khalif Raymond? Is he still there? I think he's
yes.
Still there. So Tim Patrick, Khalif Raymond. And there's even that new rookie, Tesla, which is a great name, Tesla. He's not going to get the target share. I don't love that. The boom bust is awesome for a certain person's point of view, but it's not going to be mine in those, you know, 5 to 7 rounds range. If that makes any sense at all, because I feel like I'm spinning a yarn here.
No, it absolutely makes sense. I think that kind of the thing that pops into my mind is, who here plays best ball? We don't, but best ball is an increasingly more popular form of fantasy football. If you're not familiar with it, look it up. We don't have time to tell you about it. But Jameson Williams, I think, the ideal best ball dart throw. Great guy to have early on your bench because he has that high ability. But it really depends on your philosophy as a manager when it comes to anything else. Do you want high ceiling guys or do you want high floor guys? You usually can't have both. Mm-hmm. So, you mentioned those other guys, Tim Patrick, Isaac Nikola Tesla, Khalif Raymond. None of those guys are draftable.
No, definitely not.
Sam Laporta, currently looking at as the tight end 4. Had a very weak start to the season last year. Through the first 9 games, he had 2 games in double digits, and those were the only 2 games he had touchdowns in. He took off a little bit during the back half of the season. Ended up performing, you know, in a season when tight ends really weren't doing much. Performing moderately well, having double digits in his last 6 games, I believe. But that didn't stop some people from calling him, you know, Sam LaPorta potty, which do not condone.
We draw the line at toilet-based humor.
That's where we draw the line. Sam LaPorta, currently looking at as a tight end 4. Now, where that tight end 4 is going and how that works into your team composition, I think matters a lot. Because team composition, and that's just your strategy of how you want to put which positions and which places to build a team you think is competitive, matters a whole lot more in the early rounds than it does in even the middle rounds, even at 5, 6, 7. If you are looking at somebody like Brock Bowers, who is, I think, the undisputed tight end 1 right now, you're probably going to have to shell out a second round pick to get him. And it's probably going to be an early second round pick the way I've been seeing it. Maybe you get lucky and he falls to the 3rd. It probably won't. So does that screw up the rest of your team composition down the road? Swallowing a 5th or 6th round pick for Sam LaPorta feels a hell of a lot better than that. And knowing that, you know, tight ends, it's a good market right now to punt on, that feels a lot more palatable to me. Mm-hmm. Taking him in, you know, the middle rounds there. I'm still not expecting to spend a lot of capital on tight ends this year, especially not early. But if they fall at some point, the value just becomes too much to pass up. What's your take, Stu?
Yeah, he was something like, over the course of the season, 20%, 25% less production than he did in his rookie season. So he was ultimately a really, really disappointing pick for you. He was going in like the 3rd or the 4th in 2024 drafts. People were really excited about him, thought he was the next Travis Kelce, and then he falls flat on his face there in the early season. Even in games that they're winning, like I look at October 13th, they played at Dallas, won 47-9. He had one reception for 52 yards and a touchdown. Awesome, great, not a bad day fantasy wise, but I mean, that's just not enough work in an offense mm-hmm. that can be as good as this one can be. So, you're right. Over the last bit of the season, he gets a little bit better, a little bit more palatable. He's really the last tight end in ADP that I would take and feel pretty excited to have. So, he feels... I wish you didn't use palatable, because palatable is just a really good word for Sam LaPorta. Like, we're not... you know, overblown hype train for him, but he's also not going down with the, like, Travis Kelce's, the Mark Andrews, and the Jonnu Smiths or something. He's definitely an easy tier or 2 tiers above what they should be in the 2025 season. So perfectly happy with where he is. I don't think he'll end up on a lot of my teams personally, just from how my strategy is kind of laying out and how my mocks are playing out, but good for him. I hope for a better season from him, because he's young, he's talented, plays for a great, great offense, and you want pieces of great offenses on your fantasy teams.
Mm.
We got to talk about the old guy now, though. He's 30. Oh, God, he's only 30.
Jared Goff is only 30?
Jared Goff is only 30. He was born 10-14 of 94.
Oh, man. Still older than me. Jared Goff, in my side here, I'm seeing him as the QB14. He's a streamer. Maybe someone who ends up being a backup quarterback if you're in a league where that sort of thing happens. He is attached to a good offense. That's the thing to remember here if you are going to look at Jared Goff. His numbers usually aren't going to explode off the page, but Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Sam Laporta, he can chuck it up, say someone's got to be out there, and he's got the tools to be right a lot of the time. Not to mention that he's got great tools out of his backfield that he can dish the ball to for good dump-off points. You know, not sexy. I don't think anyone has ever claimed that, okay, as a football player, Jared Goff is sexy. Maybe someone thinks as a person he's sexy. I don't know if he has a wife, but I would assume she does. But Jared Goff, QB14, streamer.
Yeah, he ended up quarterback 6 last year. He's also married to a woman named Kristen Harper, and they have a daughter, at least one daughter, in a quick Google search. She's got long black hair, it's curly, and they look like polar opposites because she's a lot shorter, he's tall and blonde. Anyway, we're off base. Jared Goff
is sexy. Jared Goff is sexy. There we go.
He offers nothing on the ground, which is a huge detractor for him from me. If you can attach yourself to a quarterback that runs, because those are free and easy points on busted plays or well-covered plays where his downfield options are not there, Jared Goff isn't running anywhere, or at least he's not running anywhere quickly. And something that we haven't mentioned, we probably mentioned it on the show before, but as a pure pocket passer, he's going to be very, very reliant on his offensive line. Well, Frank Ragnow, his all-pro center, is gone. He was 27 and he retired because football is a crazy game, and I can't imagine playing it for decades. So, I'm not interested in Jared Goff. I don't think anyone at his current ADP should be interested in Jared Goff. He should be, like, you punted on QB and he's sitting there and you think, oh, I mean, Detroit's a pretty good team. I should stick him on my roster and then take a second person like Drake May a little bit later. Mm-hmm. He's going too early, and that's really just the flat of it. I mean, someone in your league is going to take him. They're probably not going to be too upset about it, but you're going to be richer in depth and in skill position players, and I don't think you'll be sorry to have passed up on Jared Goff.
Yep. All right, we are behind schedule. We got to hit the Vikings real quick. Let's talk receivers for the Vikes. Justin Jefferson, up there in the conversation for best wide receiver in the NFL with Ja'Marr Chase and CeeDee Lamb. I'm currently seeing him as the wide receiver 3 in PPR. And last year, I believe that is where he finished as the wide receiver 3. He is explosive. He has great separation in his route running. He is, just in general, an extremely good route runner. He has huge catch radius. He has incredible upside. He, at no point during the season last year, except for the last week in the season where I believe everybody was resting, he hasn't had less than 4 receptions, and at no point had less than 5 targets, except for a weird, I believe, like super rainy game against Chicago where they blew him out anyway. So, Justin Jefferson, if you are looking at him in the first half of the first round, go get him. I would put him above, okay, would I put him above CeeDee Lamb? Because I just remembered who his quarterback is. It's not exciting. It's J.J. McCarthy.
It's kind of exciting. I am excited.
Okay, this is a conversation that everybody had last year that we're now going to remind ourselves of, but because he was hurt last year and wasn't a question for, is he going to get in a game? And Sam Darnold was there. It wasn't a thing last year. But J.J. McCarthy is now suddenly sexy as a quarterback. When they drafted him from a Michigan team where he never threw the ball. That was a run-first team, and it was very heavily run-first. I don't understand why people are suddenly looking at J.J. McCarthy as a viable NFL quarterback, because they didn't before.
I'll tell you why. Because they've revamped the offensive line. He plays for an excellent coach in Kevin McConnell. He has one of the best wide receiver duos in football. Jefferson is second only to Chase, in my opinion, and that's not a hot take in the slightest. And he also has 2 serviceable running backs that he can lean on. and provided he has decent mobility after his knee surgery. It was just a meniscus, so I don't think he's going to be limited in any way. He's also kind of sneakily quick, and he'll be able to run for some 400, 500 yards over the course of the season. And to be getting him in, like, the 11th, the 10th, and just seeing what he can do, I mean, this is the team that revived Sam Darnold. This is the team that revived the ghost spotter, remember? Like, this is the guy that would fall down for nothing. And now Sam Darnold is a multi-millionaire and playing for Seattle. So that's why people are excited about J.J. McCarthy. I'm excited about J.J. McCarthy. I got a surprise you aren't, James.
I just don't see it. We last saw J.J. McCarthy play football really 2 years ago. I think we saw him in one preseason game last year, and that was only barely. But coming out of the draft, his... Like, maybe you could say that, what's his face?
Jim Harbaugh?
Jim Harbaugh. What the hell? That was dumb. Maybe Jim Harbaugh just was so, believed so much in Blake Corum that he was just like, yeah, we're going to pound the rock and it's not going to matter. You don't get to throw because we don't need to throw. And he just was secretly this incredible passer the entire time, but we didn't really see him do a lot of passing at the college level. In the Big Ten, which, you know, there's a huge difference between Big Ten football and NFL football, but that's a good conference for defensive secondaries. If he can't do it against them, I don't know how he's going to do it in the NFL. And yes, he sat behind Sam Darnold, and KOC elevated Sam Darnold and all this. I haven't seen anything to suggest that he can do it. That doesn't mean he can't. It's just I'm extremely skeptical, and I'm skeptical of the change of heart that people have had towards J.J. McCarthy. That's just
skeptical enough. Skeptical enough to not blow a 10th or 11th rounder on him?
I mean, he's...
Like, that's basically free.
He's sitting at the QB 20. I don't think he'll be drafted. That's what I'm seeing, at least. If it was a dynasty league,
I'd draft him.
You go ahead and draft him. I got other things that my late round draft capital has to go to.
Yeah, you want Chris Tillman there at the end of the draft?
I was trying to think of something better, but sure, Chris Tillman. Anyway, we're still behind schedule, and we're supposed to be talking about Justin Jefferson. I guess
it's only getting
worse.
Jordan Addison. You don't need to talk about him. Like, we know what Justin Jefferson is, and he's only 26, so he's going to keep doing it. So now we get to talk about Addison. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, Jordan Addison, I'm looking at him, PPR wide receiver 36. He does have some outstanding issues. He has had a DUI hearing today. Not really sure what's going to come of that either. He's pleading not guilty. Don't know if that affects an upcoming suspension, but I would guess that from a DUI, there's a good chance you get a game or two as a suspension. Maybe more, maybe less. I don't know. But Jordan Addison, as a rookie, showed us a lot of his very high-profile skill set. He is a great wide receiver to have opposite Justin Jefferson, has a lot of possession technique, also a good route runner, not anywhere near Justin Jefferson, but he's a great number two, I think. Last year, not as impressive. Maybe people were expecting him to jump up into wide receiver two territory, and maybe they thought wide receiver two was going to be a little bit bigger of a point load than it ended up being. But Jordan Addison, now sitting as the wide receiver 36, a lot of people are kind of sleeping on him. I think he still has that. He still has that ability to be that guy. But, again, I'm skeptical of the quarterback. Stu is not. Stu, what are your thoughts on Jordan Addison?
Jordan Addison, great guy to stick on your bench, see what happens with the suspension, but he has yet to finish outside of the top 20 in wide receivers. Like, to get him at wide receiver 36, that could very well be a steal. That's what I would call a value. I think it's something like 3 games that they players usually get for DUIs, things like that. Who knows what happens? He actually just had a hearing in regards to it today, Tuesday the 15th, so we'll have to see exactly what happens. He's another wait-and-see, just like Quinshon Judkins, but when I said Quinshon Judkins was undraftable, I'd be perfectly happy taking Jordan Addison to fill my bench. So there's not much, honestly, that I would like to say other than that. So we can talk about the running backs. We got two of them. It's honestly, it's not an exciting backfield for me, but I could see a world where it is serviceable, and it's helmed by Aaron Jones Sr., who I have thick internal bias for. So, James, why don't you start us off with Aaron Jones?
I also kind of have thick internal bias for Aaron Jones. I think he's a really talented running back who has showed really good longevity in the league, and I'm seeing him in PPR as running back 24. Assuming that, and this is me assuming, we haven't seen anything yet out of training camp to suggest one way or another, but assuming that there's going to be a good amount of running the damn ball with J.J. McCarthy at the helm, I think running back 24 is really pretty low for who I think Aaron Jones is and what I think he can be. We've also seen him putting up some really solid production out of the backfield as a pass catcher. I think Aaron Jones at RB24 is lumping in a little bit of injury history, lumping in a little bit of having Jordan Mason there with him, which I wouldn't be incredibly threatened by Jordan Mason. Like, he's going to get touches, but, I mean, Aaron Jones is very good. I have targeted Aaron Jones a few times in mock drafts. I'm seeing him right now going in the 5th, sometimes the 6th. I'm not sure I would really target him unless I go wide receiver heavy in the first few rounds, but I do really like Aaron Jones as a football player. We will see what that kind of longevity feeds us and what this new quarterback feeds us. Stu, Aaron Jones.
He was honestly a huge surprise. I thought his career was going to be petering out after his 2023 season in Green Bay. He was fighting nagging injuries the entire time. He now leaves and goes to Minnesota. I'm thinking to myself, okay, yeah, whatever. Like, go out to pasture, like, go off and graze. It'll be okay. But he turned it an excellent season. He had his most rushing yards for his career, if you'd believe it, at 1,138. He topped his 2022 season by 17 yards at age 29. Good for you, man. Longevity's awesome. It's going to be over soon. I don't expect him to have too many more seasons like that, which is why I'm not super high on him. Like you said, if you went wide receiver Brock Bowers or Trey McBride heavy in the early rounds and stuck him in as your running back two, that would be serviceable enough. You might get a goodly portion of the season out of him. Jordan Mason has shown that he can shoulder the load of a backfield, albeit I will put in a word of caution. That was a Kyle Shanahan offense, and Kyle Shanahan loves to, you know, mix it up, but stay with one guy. See, he can get a lot of good production out of seemingly random people, and then quit Christian McCaffrey. So now with Mason going somewhere else, Who are we to say exactly what he's going to be in a new system now behind Aaron Jones? Are they going to split more evenly? I mean, Jordan Mason's less of a pass catcher than Aaron Jones is, so they could definitely complement each other in the way that Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery do, but at a far worse level than the Detroit guys. So Jordan Mason's going super late. I don't know if you mentioned exactly what his average draft position is, but quick little control F here.
I was seeing him in the 9th round in mock drafts I was doing today.
Yeah, he's running back 38 in standard, overall 108.
39 in PPR.
He's cheap and could very well vault into good production if Aaron Jones were to miss some time. So if you're banking on injuries, which you can't do, of course, because we can't predict injuries, Jordan Mason's totally fine.
Stu, however, can predict injuries because he's a doctor. But last guy we got to talk about today is TJ Hockenson. Missed most of the season last year recovering from an injury he sustained at the end of the season before. I am seeing him in PPR as the tight end 5. That should tell you something about the state of the tight end position in 2025. A guy who barely played a year before, missing most of the season, and wasn't horrifically impressive when he did come back. I'm sus of TJ Hockenson right now at his current position. He's going in in mock drafts I've seen today. Going in the same round as Sam Laporta, going in the 6th. I think there is a huge difference between Sam Laporta and TJ Hockenson. 2 years before, I'd say that there's a good comparison there. However, right now, I'm not saying TJ Hockenson can't get back to where he was. I am, however, going to say there's a new quarterback. The receiving room hasn't gotten worse. And, you know, you weren't around last year to build chemistry with this team, and we don't know what this new quarterback is going to look like with you. So I'm not going to draft TJ Hockenson. I know the name and the history associated with it might be attractive, but I'm skeptical.
Yeah, someone will take him, but I think he's more of a product of not everyone is on our bandwagon for punting for tight ends, so you feel like you have to take something. Mm-hmm. It's the middle rounds. I haven't taken my tight end yet. What am I going to do? I can't wait until later. Everyone's going to be gone. So they take TJ Hockenson, a guy who had no touchdowns, 41 receptions over the last 2 months of the season, didn't look ultimately very impressive, and like you said, now has a new quarterback. So and he has the target percentage that's Sam Laporta did not, but that's probably the only thing that he has over Laporta. I would take Laporta in every other category.
Yeah. I get a really bad feeling. I was talking about changes in ADP over the course of the summer early in the episode. I get a really bad feeling that Sam Laporta and TJ Hockenson are both guys who are going to shoot up in ADP, who are going to, they're going to the 6th now. I get the feeling we're going to start seeing them before the end of the summer going the 5th and maybe the 4th. They don't belong there, probably, but that's where they're going to go. But we got through the first half of the NFC North. How do you feel?
Yeah, it only took us 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. I am ready and thirsty. I'm ready for last call, James.
All right. Last call. Stu, my friend, what are you drinking this evening?
Well, you guys remember the Easter beers? It's now July.
I am
still on the Lagunitas. It's Beast of Both Worlds tonight. I've talked about it before. It's super common, so you guys probably don't need me to talk your ear about it, off about it. It's good. I like it fine. I just don't drink beer that much. I drink it for this show, and when I want to drink recreationally, it's more rum and cokes or seltzers or something. So anyway, James, you're the beer guy. You're the one who knows this sort of stuff. I'm the doctor injury guy. You're the beer guy. Let us know what you're drinking tonight.
I am very much the beer guy. And for this beer I'm drinking tonight, I am drinking from Art History Brewing in, I think, Geneva, Illinois. The Good Morning Munich Bavarian Style Helles Lager. This is a 5.2 ABV beer. And quick facts on the Helles. In the 1890s, some technological advances came to Germany in the region of Bavaria, where people were able to alter the mineral composition of their brewing water. So Munich, a region which had traditionally brewed dark beers, was now able to brew light beers like they'd been doing in the Pilsen region of Czechia. So, this is that. This is the first light German beer, and it is delicious. So, let's crack these bad boys in 3, 2, 1. And it is so good. And as we're pouring these beers, closing thoughts from Dr. Stu.
Yeah, we are on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, at Fantasy Foot Beer. Reach out to us, comment, like, subscribe, chat with us. I don't know. Do whatever you do on social media. We take beer requests, fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. Would love to hear what you guys drink and tell me what to drink so you don't have to listen to me crack open a can of Lagunitas for the next however many shows we have. But just that, James. Wrap us up for the evening, shall we?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for spending another 45 minutes with us here today. We very much appreciate your time, and you could choose a lot of podcasts, but you chose ours, and you chose right. So, for all of us here at Fantasy Foot Beer, for Dr. Michael Stewart, I'm James Kemp. Good night. Good time.